in Perek Lamed He, Pasuk Tet Zayin, it says, "Vayisu mi Beit El, vayehi od kivrat haaretz livro Efrata," and they traveled from Beit El, and when they were yet a stretch of land, a distance from Efrat, which means they're on the way someplace between Beit El and Efrat. And of course, in our minds, we would imagine, and maybe we're wrong, but we would imagine that Beit El is where Beit El is, and Efrat is where Efrat is. So if that's the case, so then we could somewhat imagine how they're traveling. But they're someplace in the middle. They're not quite yet there by Efrat. Again, Vayhi od kivrat ha'aretz levo Efrata, right? Not quite in Efrat. But Teled Rachel. At that point, Rachel decided to go into labor. I actually have a friend who went into labor on the way from Gush Etzion to Yerushalayim, and she actually gave birth right in front of Kever Rachel. Yeah. Yeah, that was in the old days when the road used to go through Kever Rachel, and they indeed named the baby Rachel. But, and I'm sure somehow it was her husband's fault. I'm not sure why, but I'm sure, but somehow it was his fault that they did get there on time. So she decided to go into labor. Vateled Rachel, vatikash bilidita, and she had difficulty in the birth. Vayihi bahakoshota. And as she was having the difficulty giving birth, the mieledet says to her, the midwife says to her, al tiri, which whenever somebody says don't worry, what does it mean?
Worry.
Yeah, you have reason to worry. Especially if you can kids say right there, right? Don't worry. So that's when I worry when people tell me not. I don't worry till they tell me not to worry. At that point, I realize that I should be worrying. Al tir'i, don't worry. Ki gam ze lach ben, for this is also for you a child, a son. What's interesting about this is, again, when she said not to worry, so you know that she had good reason to worry, as we'll see in a second. Secondly, with the birth of each of her children, there is a reference to the other child. When the first child is born, she does say, you know, that God should give me another child, Yosef ben Acher, and that's why he's called Yosef, you know, give me another one. And over here, when she's about to give birth, she says, oh, you have another child, which therefore makes reference to the first one. V'yihi b'tzeit nafsha kimeta, and as her soul was departing, because she in fact died, so most likely we're getting ahead of ourselves, reporting to us the death, v'tikrashmo ben Oni. She calls himself the son of my, and Oni I would translate right now as the son of my mourning, right? And Onen is the first stage of mourning. Ben Oni, the son of my mourning. Va'aviv karalo Binyamin, and his father called him Binyamin. Again, that happens, it doesn't happen so much, but that happens sometimes in families, that different, never happens that the parents call them different things? My father-in-law's name was Moshe Chaim. But it was after two different parts of the family, and there were some who called him Chaim Moshe, because, their side of the family, they called him different things. Vatamat Rachel, Rachel died, Vatikaver b'derech Efrata, and she was buried on the way to Efrat, he Beit Lechem, and that is Beit Lechem. It's not clear, by the way, if he Beit Lechem refers to where she's was buried, or if that's another name for Efrat. I'm not saying based on other sources. I'm saying just based upon reading this verse over here. B'derech Efrata, he Beit Lechem. Right, so I'm just saying is that, is the He Beit Lechem, I know, but is the He Beit Lechem referring to where she's buried, or is the He Beit Lechem referred to, is that another name for Efrat? And of course, this is even more complicated because places like Beit El and places like Beit Lechem, there are multiple places with these names. Right? Right. Vayatsev Yaakov Matseva, and Yaakov puts up a monument, Al Kvurata, on her gravesite, He Matsevet Kvurat Rachel Ad Hayom. And that is the monument until this very day. Although I would have a suspicion that the monument which is on top of her gravesite today is not necessarily the same one that Yaakov put up. Okay? So sometimes to this very day does not necessarily mean to this very day, but... Excuse me? Right, right. I mean, there is another reference to where Rachel's buried at another place in Tanakh that we'll look at soon, which will just add more, unless you want to look at it now. It will just add more confusion. Sefer Shmuel, right. You see it? Number four, right there. Okay. Yeah. Bilechtecha hayom mi'imadi umatzata shnei anashim. The context here does not make that much of a difference for us. Shnei anashim im kfurat Rachel b'gvul binyamin b'tzel tzach v'amur elecha, and so on and so forth. So over here it just describes the kever of Rachel on the border of Binyamin, unless, of course, it means that that's also a path that people were taking from kever Rachel to the gvul of Binyamin. But it is unhelpful, let me put it that way. Unhelpful, at least in the identification of where necessarily she's buried. Well, that's part of the problem. Again, anybody interested in this, so I would strongly suggest that you look up at the commentaries on this particular pasuk in Shmuel. Let's go back and look at source number two and look at the psikta. And the psikta says something and doesn't say something, or avoids saying something because it almost doesn't want you to say something, but you'll understand very quickly what it doesn't want you to say because other people will then very quickly say it. But Teled Rachel, Batekesh Beledeta, Milamid she'ena isha nivdeket ela bishat leda. That a woman, I mean, this is a theme that you're familiar with, that a woman is examined, as it were, and examined over here means from above, from heaven, at the moment where she gives birth, which is presumably this is a time of peril, this is a time, almost we say a time of judgment, this becomes like a personal Yom Kippur. V'hainu ditnan, and that's what it means, al shloshad v'rim nashim meitot bishat leidatan, al she'en izirot b'chala b'nidavad lakatener, v'afal pi she'bechol elu ha'shlosha lo netchayva Rachel imenu. But Rachel was not guilty of any of these things. So, as I said, what did it say and what doesn't it say? It says that a woman, that when it comes to a point of giving birth where somebody's in a precarious situation, so at that moment, it searches and it looks at the person's deeds. The Mishnah seems to tell us that three specific areas which are looked into. So what is the Psikta then telling us? It's telling us that Rachel died, but don't go assuming that she died because of any of these things. Which, of course, then you'll ask, so then why is it telling me this? So it seems to be telling me this in order to, again, it seems to be, I'm not, you can obviously interpret this in different manners, in a different fashion, but it seems to be saying that when it comes to Rachel's death, don't go attempt to give reasonings for it. Because even the basic reasons that the Mishnah speaks about, this doesn't apply over here, which would therefore seem to be going within the approach that when tragedy happens, that there may be a temptation of some people to try to give a rationale, an explanation, understanding of why this tragedy happened. So it seems to be saying, don't. When it comes to the death of Rachel, don't. And even the normal things that are normally looked into, don't look into them over here. That seems to be exactly what this teaching is telling us. Nonetheless, in Medrash Rabbah, we find at least two different reasons why Rachel died. Bata'an Rachel v'Leah. And over here we find Rachel and Leah responding to Yaakov. Vatomarnalo, and they said to him, Lama meta Rachel Tchila? Rav Yudin, Rav Yossi. There's an argument between Rav Yudin, which is Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi, who said, Rav Yudin Omar, Shedibra b'pnei achota. Why did she die? Because she was the younger sister, and she should not have spoken out in front of the older sister. A person is supposed to have respect for their elders, and this is why she died. Which, by the way, if it would have said because of chal and air and whatever, you probably would have felt a little bit better than the reason which Rav Yudin puts forth. And by the way, of all things that Rachel ever did in her life, that this is the one that he hones in on is really quite strange. Rabbi Yossi then gives a different reason. Rabbi Yossi, Re'itami Amecha, Adam Kore, Reuven, V'Shimon, One Oto, V'lo L'Rachel Kora, V'Rachel Anta, Oto Aldaite, Rabbi Yehuda, Nicha Aldaite, Rabbi Yossi, V'lo, Meita Ella Miklalato Shel Zaken. So I'm skipping the middle part there, but it says that according to Rabbi Yossi, why did Rachel die? Miklalato shel zaken, because of the curse of that elderly man. Now, which elderly man is this referring to? It's to Yaakov. Yaakov at various times is referred to as the elder. This, right, Rabbi Soloveitchik once explained, because he's the only of the patriarchs who you see having a relationship with his grandchildren, right? So it's Yaakov, it's Yisrael Saba, which is actually a term which has been adopted in Kabbalistic literature. Yisrael the grandfather, Yaakov the grandfather. Avram also had grandchildren. Yitzchak had also grandchildren. But when it comes to Avraham, you never see, even though the lives overlap, you never see Yaakov and Esav sitting on his lap. When it comes to Yitzchak, even though his life overlaps with his grandchildren, you never see any interaction between them. Yaakov, on the other hand, you find interaction, and you find him speaking to Ephraim and Menashe. Okay? This is something that doesn't happen. So over here, to call Oto Zaken, that old man, Shenemar, Imasher Timtza et Ohalecha, Lo Yichyeh, V'haya Kishkaga Hayotze Milfnei Hashalit. V'tignav Rachel, V'tamat Rachel. So it's saying over here is that when the Trafim went missing, a couple of years ago we had a whole class on Trafim. Anybody remember that? One. So, okay. See, else I could have done that again. So, what? Remember that we had it. Okay. It's okay. I probably don't remember what I said either, so you don't have to know. No, aside from that. I had a whole class on the Trefim, where we actually went into Professor Sperber's book on magic, where he described what the Trefim actually were and what they looked like and so on. So then nobody remembers that. It was. Anyway, see, that's really the message. I think that the Rosh Hashiv and Karen Biavner of Goldwich, when I was told that he had 5 years' worth of classes on Chumash, because anybody who was in Hezder, he was normally there for 5 years, So then you can recycle after five. So I guess that would probably be a good idea. It's in there somewhere. Okay. Anyway, I've done more than 5 years worth of Chumash, so I really should be recycling at this point. It's very ecological, from what I understand. Okay. The concept over here, it's actually a verse which is quoted. Shkaga hayotze b'fnei hashalit, which means if the king says off with his head, right, the head comes off. Even if he didn't mean that guy, he says off with his head, and you know, the king meant someone else's head, but he points at that guy. So what happens to that guy when the king says something? So that's it. So kishkaga hayotze mnei hashalit, it's like a mistake that comes out of the mouth of a ruler. So over here, Yaakov, therefore, seemed to be on such a high spiritual level where Yaakov says that whoever has the trefim, how do you say trefim in English? Tariffs? I don't know. Whoever has the trefim will die. So what happens? They die. So therefore, the death of Rachel is blamed on Yaakov. So over here, we found in this midrash two reasons. We found in the previous midrash no reasons, and actually, you know, almost like a tendency to avoid giving reasoning. I guess when she died. No, I don't know. I'm not aware of that. But I do want to ask a question.
Whatever happens with
this week's parasha, at some point, Yaakov says, get rid of all of the Avodah Zarah. So the question also there is, where do they get it from? Most likely, based on context, it sounds like that's what they took. That was the spoils that they took out of Shechem. They took all. It says they took all the things out of Shechem, and Yaakov says, "Okay, now get rid of all these things." Although presumably that if the Trafim were still around at that point, so then it would have been they would have been destroyed then. Why did she take the Trafim? So there is the obvious reason which we learned, and then there is the less obvious reason that we need to consider. The obvious reason is because Rachel wanted to be makariv her father. She worked for one of these professional outreach organizations, and therefore kiruv starts in the home. Her father is an idolater, and this is her last chance to take away her father's idolatry, so therefore she takes it away. The second possibility is that maybe she believed that these things actually work, and therefore this is sort of like his crystal ball, and this will give him the information about where they are, and they left, and they're on the way, and she does not want him to be able to find them, so therefore she takes away his crystal ball. Now, even that I can then subdivide into two different levels and say that maybe it gives him confidence, and that's enough, and it's not reality, or the other is that taking it away will depress him, and that's the reason to take it away. But still, that she takes away, not that she takes away because she's afraid. Excuse me? Right, so therefore it can work backwards. So I just give two different reasons to take it. One is to separate her father from sin, which, as you're aware, some commentaries are going that direction. Other reason is because she doesn't want her father to have this. But there is a third possibility that you'll find completely uncomfortable. And the third possibility is that she has been suffering from infertility for a while, and is she willing to try all kinds of things in order to help her with her infertility? Now, the terrible thing about this... What? So hold on to that for a second. She's not pregnant at this point. I can actually prove that. But, all right? Maybe they did, see? Okay, one second. That we know that she had a long stage of infertility. And when she does have a child, what does she say? As we've already indicated, what does she say? You know, give me another child. Now, the problem with what I'm saying is, why in the world would I want to take Rachel Imenu and then turn her into an idolater? I mean, that's not a very nice thing to do. And therefore, I completely agree that this is not a very nice thing to say or a very nice direction to go in. But I mean, her interest in trying to have another child is expressed, again, I'm saying this the third time, right? Is expressed immediately when she has that first child. When her father does come in to search all around, what does she say to him? Which therefore means that she's not pregnant. Okay, fine. One second. Well, so is she being truthful or not? At this point, but I don't need to explain to you why, if she is Bederech Nashim, that would indicate that she, right, this part, I mean, some classes, I need to explain this way. No, it doesn't, yeah. It doesn't sound that way, but again, I do want you to get into the mindset of the family dynamic, that for many, many years, you would have this disappointment. Again, she's married for a while before she has the first child, and every time that she does get her period, there is going to be this disappointment and this depression and so on and so forth. And it's almost there's emotional blackmail there. I don't know if you then realize this. Her saying to her father, no, I'm having my period, he doesn't want to be, meaning, it's it. He's not going to continue the conversation with her because he knows how she'll get at this point. Again, I'm not saying hormones per se. Do you understand what I'm saying? The depression of the infertility is going to be really to weigh upon him as well. Listen, after all, this is his daughter. This is not it's not some kind of stranger. And yes, he's looking for his, excuse me? Yeah. He cares because that's his whole speech that he gives. These are my children, these are my grandchildren. He happens to care a lot. I mean, the problem with Lovin is that he cares too much. It's not, the problem with Lovin is nothing else, is that he cares too much and he doesn't want to let go of them. That's the problem. Yeah.
I think that's so far-fetched,
Exactly.
What are the
Dudaim? There's some kind of... You want to see my notes here? Dudaim, right next to the word Trefim. Right. So that would have been the reason why I would have at least even of explored this idea was the Duda. Yeah. Actually, whether the Dudaim help or not is debatable. All of the ancient authorities who discuss the Dudaim say they don't understand why it would have helped. Again, I don't think it made the cut in terms of the sources. But the Ramban, as a physician, says I have no idea why somebody would think this would work. And he said it's one of the few times I've seen the Ramban speaking as a physician in his commentary to the Torah. Excuse me. Yeah, there's also an argument. What Dudaim are? Some say it's jasmine. And if you go look into the commentaries on the Dudaim section, there are those who say that if you look at the root of the Dudaim, it looks like the human form. And anything which looks human, therefore people believed had some kind of power to them. It's also possible that the Dudaim were not necessary for fertility as much as they were an aphrodisiac. But that itself would be interesting, because then in order to get it, she trades with her sister. Yeah. I agree. Look, the problematic issue, again, what is it that we want to figure out right now? Let's think a second. What we want to figure out is, just in case you've lost the line of thought right now, because there's actually a very serious question. According to what we just now read, Rabbi Yossi in the Medrash, what did he tell us? That Rachel died because she took the Trefim. He didn't say it in those words. In what words did he say it? That he died because Yaakov said, because of Yaakov's curse. So now, what I'm really asking is this Yaakov's curse because Yaakov has this power and anything that Yaakov says is going to happen, which really it does sound to me what he's saying, or is it possible that the curse works over here because there is something problematic in terms of the behavior as well, in terms of having taken the Trefim? Does that make any sense now? Or she's opened herself at least to attack. She's opened herself up. She's opened herself up to the fact that some illiterate rabbi 3,000 years later, 4,000 years later, can come and say, oh, look, Rachel took the Trefim. Why did she take them? Again, I can't possibly know what her motivation is. I'm just saying is that having taken them does put her in a very interesting problem, because she's basically taken something which is seen to be by the way, it's also made out of a human form. But I don't know if, that's what I discussed, the Trefim. I didn't say, that's exactly, I'm not saying it's so far-fetched. Again, at some point, when they get into the land of Israel, Yaakov says, now, get rid of all these things. There's a new world order now. There's a new rule. There's something else going on. Which means, as much as you say that we had to, you know, didn't want the influence of the in-laws, or whatever. Well, guess what? These kids were raised under that influence, and now at some point they're going to have to undergo some kind of a paradigm shift in terms of their outlook, in terms of who they are. So, all that I'm trying to do, again, there was just one thing I was trying to do, and what was that? Trying to understand why the death of Rachel would be connected to the Dudaim. You could tell, again, have a real myopic. You can have a real myopic understanding of it and say it's because of the words of Yaakov, and you can justify yourself with that by what it actually says in the Midrash. It is a mistake that comes out of the mouth of the ruler, right? Shekayate me, right, from the Shalit. The word comes out, and that's it. Her fate is sealed. Or you can try to look a little bit deeper and say, so why specifically in this context? And that's why I, you know, tried to look at it at least... at least a little bit more. Yeah.
Go back to the first reason that was given, because everyone kind of concluded.
Yeah.
She spoke before her sister, but it seems like it can't be that he would just say that. And it seems to me there's something in that, there's like some kernel there also about the switching and the divisiveness and the secrecy and the confusion that results with Reuben, where there are reverberations that come out of.
So we will. We'll look into this because the whole relationship with the sister is interesting. Again, let's look at source number five, because I think this is absolutely connected, and you'll see in a very cruel way. It's connected. Source number five is when Rachel is suffering from her infertility. Vatere Rachel kilo yilda, which is also very interesting. What does it mean? Vatere, she saw. She shouldn't have said that. Vatere. Tereh makes it contextual, which we need to figure out what the context is. Vatereh Rachel ki lo yoda li Yaakov. So that's also interesting. Right? Vatereh ki lo li Yaakov. Vatikane Rachel va'achota. And Rachel was jealous of her sister. So what is it that she sees? She sees Yaakov is playing with the kids in Leah's tent, and Yaakov has this connection with Leah, which he doesn't have, because that's what it sounds like. That's the visual here. And that's the jealousy. But the kanei Rachel ba'achota, but Tomer el Yaakov, havali banim v'im ayin meta anochi. Bring for me a child. If not, then I'll be dead. So we've seen some overly dramatic speech last week as well. 2 weeks ago, Toldot also. But do you appreciate the irony? What's the irony? When she has the child, then she dies, right? Right. If I don't have the kid, I'm going to die. So, you know, that's what you think. I mean, if you have the child, you're going to end up dying. So, as I said, there is something over here already, which is already extremely disturbing. But Yicharaf Yaakov b'Rachel v'Yomer hatachet Elokim anochi, asher mana mimech pribaten. Am I instead of God? Am I the one who's preventing you from getting pregnant? Which is also very interesting. Do I have this power? Well. And again, just keep in mind that we just now saw Midrash says, yeah, he just said a word, and that's why she died. So it's interesting over here, Yaakov. Do I have this? Excuse me? In source number six, the Yalkut Reuveni says, Teda ki Rachel v'Leah v'Yaakov garmu kol hamikraim shabo al Yosef. That the core of the kin'ah, which takes place, the jealousy between Yosef and the brothers and all that, all this comes right back to over here. Vatera kodum kol davar ktiv, vatera rachel vatikna ba'achota, vatom Yaakov havali banim, haya chet rishon bishvil hakina, gorma shenechnas yetzah hara bizot toleda, ulechein divrei dvarim shelo kahogen. That her speaking and feeling jealousy ended up causing jealousy to somehow be transmitted in terms of the child who was produced, namely Yosef, who, by the way, begamatria is kin'ah, is 156. And so the Yalkut Reuveni sees that within the essence of Yosef, there's going to be jealousy. But he says, oh, but that, don't think that that story begins in next week's parasha. He says, no, that story already began right over there, already last week, before she even gets pregnant. That's the issue. It doesn't use the word kina. She wasn't happy. So you're right. Sarah wasn't happy. Which the moral of the story is, if your wife asks you to sleep with another woman, don't. Right? Right. You can quote me on that if you want, okay? Yeah. It was disrespect. With Hagar, it was disrespect, and it wasn't jealousy. I want to read something that Rav Hirsch wrote, which you could decide if it rings true to you or not. This is actually discussing the Duda'im. I don't have the verse right here in front of me. Do I? No, I'm saying I don't have the verse that he's commenting on right in front of me. V'yelech Reuven b'yemei Ktzir Chitim. By the way, anybody who wants to explain this section will need to explain why it's Yemei Ktzir Chitim and what the relationship with the Ktzir Chitim is. What time of year is that? Right, so therefore, what would you want to connect it to? To the story of Rut and so on and so forth, right? Right, okay. Vayimtza dudaim. He finds dudaim, which some translate as jasmine. How does your English translate it? Okay. Bisadeh v'yaveh otam eleya imo. It seems to be that the main reason for bringing the dudaim is because of this, the smell. It's perfume. V'toma Rachel eleya tni na li midudaeh b'nech. Bring me the dudaim of your son. V'tomer la ha'me'at kachtech et ishi. Right, you almost take my husband. You're going to take the dudaim of my son as well, the jasmine of my son as well. Okay, we'll make an exchange. By the way, you have to. When I say you have to, means that you probably never did, but you have to compare this to the sale that Yaakov and Esav have regarding the bechorah. Because over here, you have two siblings selling something. Over here, the price of the thing and what they're getting for it seems completely disconnected to what we're talking about over here. But over here, the two siblings, Rachel and Leah, selling something, and then the two siblings, Yaakov and Esav, selling something. So, right? So, again, you all obviously realize beforehand that they're, right? Beforehand or not, obviously, connected. Okay. See, that's why you still need me. Yes, she does. She has Yisachar and Zenzevulun, who also have a business deal between the two, which is quite interesting. So what does this section tell us about the relationship between the two? As you know, as we're hearing it, it sounds like there really is a great deal of tension. And Reuven, by the way, at this age, is 4 years old at this point. That's how old he is. He's around four. He went out. He finds these flowers. He brings them to his mother, or roots, whatever it is. He brings them to his mother. And Rachel wants them. So again, there are those who read into this that there must be some kind of fertility issue involved, because that becomes a major motivation. The irony again will be that if her motivation is fertility, then sleeping with her husband would have been a good idea as well. Having, you know, taking the medication but not having the relations is not necessarily the way it works. Rav Hirsch, though, reads this completely in the most opposite fashion imaginable. He says, source 7, Nira efo shenyan kulo mishakefet yachasei hare'ut shayu shru'im bin shtei achayot. This whole section comes to attest to the degree of friendship which existed between, and he doesn't say that cynically, the friendship, re'ut, that existed between them. But od Yaakov b'sadeh, as Yaakov is out working, yoshvot hanashim b'tzavta, the two women sit together as a pair. Do we have a better word for tzavta? The evenings he trades off. Erevim layav, erevim rachel. Reuven shodenu na'ar. Reuven, who's a boy. Mevidu de'im in asadeh. Tnili mehem mevakeshet rachel. Ezed risha marhiva. Omeret layah derech halatza. So he reads the whole thing over here as they're kidding around. I don't know if you read that in the text. Ach notenet la meadu de'im. Again, I don't know what to do with Rav Hirsch over here, but it just sounds to me that it's an imaginative reading of the text, and what the Yalkut Reuveni said instead, that no, there is jealousy over here, and this jealousy will have reverberations afterwards, and there's something very dangerous about this, just seems to ring a little bit more true. Back when Rachel said, if I don't have a child, I'll be dead. So again, the theme of the death and of birth, the death and having a child, keeps coming back and forth at us. Rashi over here says, this is the source that someone without, because in the Talmud it mentions this a number of times, he goes, this is the source. Children. The Ramban considers certain approaches of Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. He doesn't like them. Instead, he says, "Valderech Hapshat, where it's underlined, Amra Rachel Yaakov Shtein Labanim, uve'emet da'ata lomar." What is she trying to say? She'd palelala. He should pray. Aval she'd palelala ad she'itein labanim al kol panim, v'mein she'tamit atzma v'tzar. If not, she will die out of pain. Dibrusha lo kehogin bikin ata. She spoke inappropriately. V'chashva, what did she think? Ki ba'ahavato ota, that being that he loved her so much, yit ane Yaakov, yet Yaakov would be destroyed because of this. V'yobesh sak, v'efer, v'tpalel ad shiu labanim shelo tamut b'tzara. Which means, again, Rachel is getting a little overly dramatic, and what the Ramban is saying is that what does she expect? Her husband loves her, and she knows Yaakov loves her, so what is she saying? That you should not be carrying on with your life. You should be absolutely despondent. You should, you know, be standing here, you know, like Choni Hamagel, draw a line in the sand and say to God that you're not moving on, you're not doing anything until you have a child, and with Rachel, because he actually has a number of children. What's also interesting that Ramban, and he does this very often, that even though he attacks somebody, he then comes right back and listens to the way where it's underlined a little bit lower down. V'nei ha-tzadeket, which means, still, she's Rachel Imenu. V'nei ha-tzadeket b'rota shelo tuchal lehasmich al tefilat Yaakov, when she saw that she could not trust Yaakov, or she could not rely, it's a better word, rely on Yaakov's tefilah, shava litpalel al atzma. Then she started to pray for herself. Al shomei atzaka v'zeo v'ishma eleha elokim, which is in Pasuk Kaf Bet. Look at source 13, you'll see Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel, Vayishma Eleha Elokim, Vayiftach et Rachma. I mean, you notice there are too many words in that verse. God remembered Rachel, God heard her, and God opened up her womb, which means it was her tefillah which actually succeeded in bringing about the pregnancy. But read the Alshech back in source number 10 now. The Efshar ki amra b'liba, that maybe what Rachel was thinking, ma shetziarti et Yaakov, sheyadai hayta b'hachlifet leya, umasarti la simanim, shilem li elokim, shalkein lo yaladati mimenu, al asher chatati lo. Very, very strong, I will translate, that she thought that the reason for her infertility is because she switched places with Yaakov. She deceived Yaakov. She changed Yaakov's life by this. So therefore, here's the karma that she gets over here, is that, you know, she... But I do want to say it a little bit deeper than the way he says it. God promised Yaakov he's going to have descendants, numerous descendants. If he would not have had another wife, so then the numerous descendants presumably would have been through Rachel. When she then goes and causes her sister to be married to him, and she starts getting pregnant one after the other, so now the promise of God to Yaakov that you're going to have children, numerous descendants, takes place through Leah. And she's here thinking that over here that her infertility is in fact a punishment for having switched places. And again, this you did think of before, that the switching places of Rachel and Leah is parallel to the switching that Yaakov did in terms of... dressing up as Esav. That obviously you thought of. And at the very end, he concludes, "V'mein meta anochi, if not, I will die, ki echzik b'kina al achoti, v'tamshich sin'a v'tacharut v'etchashev l'mita b'chaye b'avon zeh." It's interesting, the way that he's understanding the death, if I'm not mistaken, it's living a life of jealousy and hatred is death. That's the death. Which means, what does it mean? It'll be, you know, I'll be dead. I'll be dead because I'm going to be. What kind of person am I going to be? A person who walks around all the time with jealousy and hatred. Again, I think the Alshech generally is very, very powerful. The whole comment over here is very powerful and rings true. Rav Hirsch says, "Havali banim kisvurahi shehu adish l'tzara shekin kfar zachal banim milaya." Which is very similar to what the Alshech said. He doesn't quote him, but he says that he thought that he was indifferent. That basically, this is what Rachel's thinking. You're indifferent to my plight because you already have kids. I guess having multiple wives really is complicated. I also want to remind you of something that we discussed around 5 years ago in Parshat Noach. Remember this? When we discussed the idea of taking two... Parshat Bereishit, maybe. The idea of taking two wives... that we discussed Lemech, that the idea of taking two wives was common in antiquity. You would take one wife to have children, and one wife was beautiful. And that model really seems to be fitting over here. Rachel's the beautiful wife. She's the trophy wife, as it were, while Leah is the one who is often producing children. So therefore, it could be even, like, under the surface here. Again, today, when we're much more sophisticated, what people do is they have one wife and have children, then they take the trophy wife. In those days, it was probably much more efficient. They did them both at once. I mean, excuse me? Right, so it's more efficient, right? So they did them both at once, and therefore, underneath the surface over here, as she's saying, is that, you know, that's basically what you've done. You have a wife having children. You don't care about my having children. Why? Because I'm the beautiful wife. So therefore, I'm not meant to have children. I'm meant to be on his arm when he has the cocktail parties, and so on, and so forth. You haven't had a cocktail party recently?
No.
Okay, now you have something to do over Hanukkah. Yeah. He was in there. Oh, okay. Because there could have been a third one on the side. It's just okay. Okay. You will invite her for a cup of coffee, and okay. The Malbim in source number 12 writes, Rachel chashva shema shelo yolda einu misibata rak misibat Yaakov. Also, I'm not sure exactly what it is that he's referring to, but it may not be that far from what, you know, the suggestion about the two different wives. Rashi in source 14 tells us the exact opposite of what the Alshich writes. That why did God... And by the way, it's not so simple why Rashi says this. Look at the pasuk again. So I know what bothered Rashi. Meaning, what is the pasuk telling me? Again, what would I say the pshat of the pasuk is? Is that God listens to her tefillah. She turns to her husband and says, please pray for me, which is, this is great musar as well. People go running to other people for brachot and all kinds of things. And what do you see? That God answers the own person's tefillah. Over here, Rachel is difficult. I know that there's a Gemara you can ask that person can't save themselves. If you want, I can reconcile that Gemara, but not now, because just trust me, I can. Right. So it sounds to be that what it's saying is that's the emphasis, that God listened to her. But what Rashi wants to explain is, why does it say both? Why does it say Vayizkor Elokim and Vayishma Eleha? So therefore, the Vayizkor is because of something that she did to deserve to be saved. So therefore, Rashi tells us Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel Shehishtadla Lahodlid. Sorry. I was just skipped over to the Sforno. Zachal Shemasra Simanea LaAchota. The Sforno has the two stages, Vayizkor and Vayishma. Vayizkor, why? Shehishtadla Lahodlid. That she is trying to follow the natural path. One is that she asks him to have a child with her maid, and the second is that she tries to solve the infertility with the medication, with the dudaim. Vayishma elei Elokim sheit palala achar she'asta shtei minei hishtadlut, which is also a great statement to the Sforno. When does God listen? After she tries, which means if. This is the joke about the, right? Lots of jokes, right? Where somebody prays to God and... No, this is Derech HaTeva. God first says, try to do what you can do. She tries one way, she tries another way, and at the end, then she prays. Which means you don't just pray, you also try to help oneself. Bilha. Okay, we're going to...
Why is having children by Bilha
may have been less jealousy. And it may have, and she even says it there, that these will be my children. That she'll be the surrogate mother in this situation. The children of Leah, she is not the surrogate mother. Okay. She says it very clearly. If you go... Okay. With Sarah and with Hagar, the problem was, and you have to read through every time Hagar is mentioned, every time, and see whether her status was one of wife or one of maidservant. Hagar, and this goes back to the issue about Hagar, she seems to at some point think that she's the wife. When the Malach speaks to her, she says specifically to her, Hagar, Sarah is maid. I mean, that's what the Malach says. I mean, stop making this mistake. Read through every time Hagar is mentioned, you'll see that that's really the tension over there. And also question how Avraham may feel or Avraham may look at it. Okay, so that's one thing. Over here, when Rachel suggests Bilhah, it's very clearly, she says, and I will raise the children. Very clearly, and these will be my children. So take a look back over there. Correct. Bilhah ended up raising Rachel's children. Correct. Okay.
Why did Leah need to
children? There was competition there. That's what it sounds like. Competition. Who's going to have more children there? If they knew there would be 12, then that would be part of it. And that is certainly a subtext that some work with. Okay, yeah. Doesn't get married, doesn't get buried. Okay. Correct. But numerous sources, specifically Kabbalistic ones, see her as being the main wife. She is the Akeret HaBayit. She is the main wife of Yaakov. Let's go back to something about the burial, and then we'll try to tie things up. In when she's described as where it is they were traveling, it says Kivrat Aretz, which I translated, I think, as a stretch of land. In Source 18, the Ramban begins by citing Rashi, who cites someone named Menachem. Menachem Piresh Lashon Kavir Mahalach Rav. It's a long distance. So what does it mean, Kivrat Aretz? Meaning, how far is she from Ephrata? It's not clear. And then he writes, the Ramban writes, where it's underlined, V'nachon ma shechashav bo Reb David Kimchi, ki ha'kaf l'demion ve'eino shrashit, which means it's the root is not part, the kaf is not part of the root. It's ki, vrat, therefore the root would be bet reish taf. U'motza mila hayu livrot lamo, v'tivreni lechem, inyan achila mu'etet baboker, u'pirusha shi'ur malach eretz min haboker ad la'et ha'ochel. Ramban says something fascinating, that the way that people would measure distances was from the time you got up in the morning till it would be breakfast time. How much walking? What's the distance till you would eat that first meal? So that's what he calls a kivrat. He says, Zekatafti tchila. The Ramban says, this is what I originally wrote. This was in my first manuscript. V'achshav shezakiti uvati ani l'Yerushalayim, which is also a very interesting comment of the, on the Ramban's part. Shevach lakel, hatov hametiv, right? Next time somebody says, when you move to Israel, you have to quote the Ramban and say, I moved to Israel or to Yerushalayim, shevach lakel, hatov hametiv. I mean, he seems to take that quite seriously. Ra'iti be'enai, she'ein min kfurat rachel lebet lechem afilu mil. Which means what he's bothered with is, what's this Kivrat Eretz? The distance between Beit Lechem to Kever Rachel, any of you who've been to Kever Rachel, know it's not all that far from Beit Lechem. As a matter of fact, you even thought it was in Beit Lechem, right? V'nei huchash haperush hazeh v'gam divrei Menachem. He goes, what I wanted to say isn't true, and what Menachem wanted to say. It's not a stretch of land, it's not an amount of distance between eating breakfast and, you know, getting up and eating breakfast. Aval hu shem midat ha'aretz k'divrei Rashi ve'ein bo Torah rak hasmacha kirov hashemot. He says it just must be Kivrat Aretz, the name of a place. V'chein ra'iti she'ein kfura birama v'lo karovla Aval harama asher lebinyamin, and if I'm not mistaken, he's referring to Ramash of Binyamin, may very well be Kevr Shmuel HaNavi. Maybe. Could also be other places. Could also be closer to Beit El. Rachok mimena ka'arba parsaot. V'harama asher bahar Ephraim, rachok mimena yoter mishne yamim. Alkeinu nimesh ha-katuv sha'omer kol birama nishma. What is that verse referring to? Referring to Rachel mevakeh al-baneha. Right, chapter 31. Kol b'ramah nishma. So it's heard in Ramah. He says, Melitza kederech mashal. He goes, it can't be that she's buried next to Ramah, or by Ramah, because, again, this is just such a fascinating interpretation, because the Ramban lives in Israel, and he's going and traveling and looking at these places, and saying, hold it, you know, it could be somebody living someplace else imagines, oh, she's buried by Ramah, because kol b'ramah nishma. And he says, no, there's a couple different Ramot, right? There's one Ramah here, there's another Ramah there. Neither of them are particularly close to Kevir Rachel. So he says, it's Melitza. Le'mor ki'ata Rachel tso'eket b'kol gadol u'bimispeid mar ad shenishma ha'kol l'merchak b'Ramah she'haya b'rosh har libanam Binyamin. That she screams so loud until the voice is heard from the portion of her son Binyamin. Ki'enenu shambu, she's not there, v'hichar v'amehem, and it's destroyed. Which means the Ramban here is telling us a little bit about where it is that she dies, at least according to what he sees from his having visited. He continues to say, on top of page 5, V'nira ba'inai ki kivrei Yaakov b'derech v'loch nisa la'ir beit lechem Yehuda akrova l'sham l'fi shetzapa v'ruach ha'kodesh beit lechem Ephrata yelu Yehuda v'lo ratza l'kivra rak b'gvul b'na b'nyamin. Which means that we have a number of rabbinic teachings that she died in the portion of Binyamin. And therefore he didn't... But by the way, according to the Ramban is saying right over here, Kevir Rachel is not where you think it is. Okay? I don't know if that upset anybody, but the way that he's describing it is that Kevir Rachel, he's on the way. He's someplace, what do we know about it? Someplace between Beit El and between Ephrata, or Beit Lechem. And he says, why not just bury her in Beit Lechem? No, he didn't want to bury her in the Chelek of Yehuda. So now you've just got to take out a map and try to figure out where Chelek Yehuda is. And he says, on top of that, we have a rabbinic source that she died in Chelek Binyamin. We're coming there. A matter of fact, by the way, if you want to see the difference between the Ramban's interpretation versus this, you may find very disturbing and all but incomprehensible. In source number 26, the Rush says, "V'yehi v'tikaver b'derech Ephrata b'chutz la'aretz." Chutz la'aretz literally means outside of the land. It goes on. It sounds to be that he believed that Rachel was not buried in the land of Israel. So again, just among the early authorities, the Ramban says, "Yeah, I saw Kevir Rachel, but I don't understand exactly, you know, in terms of how do I work out all the sources." But we just now saw two other commentaries, right? One saying that she was buried in Binyamin and not Yehuda, and that's why he didn't bury her by Beit Lechem, and therefore it's not where you would think it is today. Secondly, we just now saw the Rush said that she's not even buried in the land of Israel. Now, what the Rush is concerned about, I think I can explain. Let's go back to the Malbim in source 19. The Talid Rachel, and Rachel gives birth. Hine Rachel nis'et bi'isur shnei achayot. Rachel's marriage was illegitimate. Why was the marriage illegitimate? Because her husband was already married to her sister. Rak shekode matan Torah haya mutar. But before matan Torah, such behavior was allowed. V'gam shaya al pi adibur. Which goes back to the point Jane made before, that it's based upon God's instructions, as it were, because we need there to be 12 tribes. אבל אחר הברכה שברכו השם להיות תחת השכחת אלוקית, מאז נוצץ עליהם העניין האלוקי כמו שיהיה אחר מתן תורה. When God gives a blessing to Yaakov, and this is on his way back to the land of Israel, and gives him this blessing, at this point they get transformed into a holy people, and the status of what they have now is as if it were after the Torah was given. ומאז היה פגם שיחזיק שני החיות. And at that point it becomes something destructive that Yaakov should be, remain married to two sisters. בפרט שכבר ילדה את בנימין, certainly once בנימין was born, ונולדו השפטים, לכן מתה רחל. ובזה תבין דברי חזל, שמתם זה מתה ולא נקברה במערת המכפלה. And that's the reason why she was not buried in Marat Rachpilah. Of course, there's something negative about the marriage to Rachel. And why are we picking on Rachel? Because he married Leah first. Whose fault is it that he married Leah first? It's Rachel's fault that he married Leah first. But nonetheless, it says at this point, there's this higher level to the Jewish people. It becomes inappropriate for him to be married to two wives, and therefore inappropriate to marry both the two sisters, and inappropriate to bury them both in the Marat HaMachpelah. Nonetheless, Rashi says in source number 20, and he's going back to the two names given to Binyamin. The first name, Ben Oni, Ben Tsari. Binyamin, Nira Be'enai, Lefisha Hu Levado Nolad Be'eretz Kanaan. Okay, which goes now against what we had seen previously in the Rush. Shehi Ben Negev, Kishadam Bami Aram Naharayim, Kemoshe Nemnar Ben Negev Be'eretz Kanaan. Holoch V'nesoa HaNegba. Binyamin, Binyamin, Lashon Tilin, Tzafon V'yamim Atem Baratam. Lefich Chumalei. I tried to convince you of this once before, and I did not remember this Rashi when I tried to. I think I tried to convince you of this. Maybe it was no. Maybe it was a different class. Maybe when the one in Givat Zev. That there are certain times that the word Yamin. I discussed this with Lod. Right. But this is very clear. Rashi is saying this very clear that Yamin refers to south. So Rashi is saying is that why is Benjamin, my son born in the south? Again, a lot of us would refer to Israel perhaps as the east, right? You would even call a movement Mizrahi, right? Over here, but it's, he refers to this, Rashi understands what is that, if you want to refer to somebody as Zionist, you should call them a Benjamin, right? That's somebody who is to the right. Okay? And you could, and as I said, you could do anything that you want with that. But that's what Rashi says over here. Others understand Binyamin differently, Ben Zakunim. You see, it's 21 and 22. The Ramban doesn't love this. Yeah. The Ramban doesn't love this because he says, once again, the Ramban was here. And he says, Israel's not south of Padan Aram. It's south and west. I mean, it's actually, it would be on an angle like this instead of south. So he really doesn't go, this is the Ramban in source 23. He doesn't love it. Lashon Rashi, v'lo hevinoti, ze shetehei Eretz Yisrael dromit la'aram naharayim, sheri aram mizrachit la'aretz Yisrael. It's not just north, it's north and east. Look at 25. 24 you can have for homework if you want. Look at 25. The Malbim writes, V'yihi b'tseit nafsha, as her soul departs, hayadata al hanolad l'kro'u b'shem, v'kro shmo ben oni, ratzalomar ben kochi, shekochi natan lo, ki himeta al yado, v'shem ze atzmo karalo aviv sham ben yamin, basically saying that my life got exchanged for his life. That there's a transformation taking place, that Ben Oni, he took my power, which means he took my life. Meaning, I had life, and now I have a child. But by the way, whether she says this out of sadness or out of joy, you can decide, but she says this is the fact what's going on, is that there is this transfer of life taking place from her to the child, but as the child, meaning as the sun rises, the sun sets. But over here, the sun is setting of her life, but it's his life. Therefore, he understands that this is a replacement. Okay. The Ramban, however, has a completely different understanding of the death, which is close to something that we had seen before, but he says it a little bit clearer. He writes, we'll look at source 26, but sorry, it's 27. Vatitma ha'aretz, vafkod avona aleh v'taki ha'aretz. So this is referring to the holiness of the land, Perek Yudchet in Vayikra. Vayikra generally there is talking about Kedusha. It then goes on to speak about the Arayot. Hichmira katuv ba'arayot. But what did it say about Arayot? V'taki ha'aretz. The land will vomit out people who break the laws of the Arayot. Illicit relationships, it gets vomited out by this land. Hichmira katuv ba'arayot. Bavur aretz shetitma behen v'taki ha'nafashot ha'asot. V'zuhi mitzvat Yaakov avinu leveto l'chol asher imo b'shat biatam la'aretz hasiru et Elohei hanechar shebetochecham v'itaru. That's why when they come to the land of Israel, that's why Yaakov says, get rid of all the idols that you may have with you. V'ashem lo levado nitkanu alilot shemeta rachel b'derech b'tchilat bo'am ba'aretz ki b'zchuta lo meta b'chutz la'aretz u'b'zchuto lo yashav ba'aretz im shtei achayot v'yaita hanis'et b'isur ha'achva. So he does want to say that Rachel was pregnant before they enter the land of Israel, before he gets to Shechem. Shechem is the first place he gets to the land of Israel. They cross over by the Yabok. You can look at the map. They cross over by the Jordan. If you go further east from Shechem, that's more or less where they crossed over into the land of Israel. He says she was already pregnant when they arrive in Shechem, and says Yaakov never touched her again after they were in Israel. Again, how the Ramban knows this exactly, but again, this is his theological understanding, that it's the land cannot tolerate Arayot, and as far as he's under, this is Arayot. So he has a whole different interpretation here. He's saying is that Rachel in Chutz La'aretz, they were allowed to be married together, but when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, they can't. If you look at source 28, this is in Perek Memchet, this is in Vayechi, Yaakov's towards the end of his life, and he wants him to bury him back in the land of Israel. He apologized for burying Rachel along the way. The Ramban here says clearly, he did not take them because he could not bury both sisters there. Ki avosh mi avotav, he'd be embarrassed because of his parents and grandparents. V'leya hi haniseit lo rishana beheter, v'rachel ba'avato ota b'neder asher nadar la lakacha. And it was his word that he was going to marry her, and he loved her, but he could not bury her the Maaret HaMachpelah because she was an illegitimate wife. I mean, he does really say this. Source 29, again, the Ramban, Yaakov does certain things which later on in the Torah will not be acceptable, including making a matzeva. Again, he believes that the Avot kept the mitzvot, but they only kept the mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban says that therefore, once they get back to the land of Israel, Rachel cannot live any longer because he cannot be married to both. Again, you can now tell me, but there may be another solution. He can just divorce her. That would also work. Read over here, source 30. This is called Erperyon, Sefer Erperyon. It's written by Rav Shlomo Ganzfried, who is the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You probably don't know all that much about him, other than that he wrote the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which, by the way, is not necessarily the most accepted and most wonderful safe in terms of halacha. He was the world's expert in terms of a book on Safrut, which means he's considered to be the posek when it comes to anything having to do with the letters of the Torah, the laws of Safrut, and how to write tefillin, how to write mezuzah, and so on. But here's his commentary to Chumash. Meita alai Rachel be'eretz Kanaan. Again, this is Yaakov speaking in Vayechi. What does he mean, meita alai Rachel? Klomer higashti ki ein bachet mishpat mavet, that she was undeserving of death. Rak hasibah heita machmat kibanu la'eretz Kanaan hakadosha דלא ניחלה לקדוש ברוך הוא שאדור בארץ הקדושה עם שתי החיות, אפילו קודם מתן תורה, and so on. ומדייק תיבת עליי, כלומר בגרם שלי, ולכן ואקברה שם ולא ברת המכפלה. Again, he's obviously influenced over here by the Ramban, but he just says it with a slightly different nuance, namely that he's saying, this was my fault that she died. Yeah. Because he married Leah first, so she is the illegitimate one. And that's when he married Leah, then that was his only wife. That means that she's the one that he was not allowed to marry. I do want to, however, go back to a verse and just consider everything that we've seen, and just, which means, in the very beginning we saw a source saying, she didn't die because of these three reasons. Afterwards, we start saying all kinds of reasons why she did die. If she didn't die for any reason, follow the sentence, it actually makes sense. If she didn't die for any reason that anybody pointed at, then there still is a reason that she died. And what would that be? So any of you have a chumash, which you probably don't, in Perek Gimel, in Bereshit, Pasuk Tetvav, it writes, and this is God's punishment being given out to the serpent. He says, Ve'eva ashit bencha uvein ha'isha, uvein zaracha uvein zara, hu yushufach rosh va'ata tushupenu akev. This is actually the first time that the akev is mentioned in the Torah, and this will have some kind of relationship with the name Yaakov as well, that Yaakov is connected to the heel. And there perhaps is some foreshadowing between Yaakov's struggle and perhaps eventual victory over the Yetzer Hara, over forces of evil, and so on and so forth. But I'm just pointing out that Yaakov is actually pointed at in this verse. But then you look at the next verse. The next verse is the punishment of Eve. Eli Isha Amar, Harbe Arbe Itzvonech, Ve'heronech, Ve'etzev Tildi Banim, Ve'el Ishech Teshukatech, Ve'hu Yimshal Bach. Which means this verse, more than anybody else, at least in Sefer Bereshit, refers to Rachel. But first of all, she's the idea of Itzvonech is referred to as Damnida, the Gemara tells us. She's the only one in Sefer Bereshit that it makes reference to Damnida. No one else does it to menstruation. Rachel is the only one. In terms of Beheronech, Be'etzev Tildi Banim, and you will give birth to a child in sadness. Again, how clearly does this go? Which means, if I were to ask, why does Rachel die? Well, Rachel dies in childbirth, because we have over here a curse taking place in Bereshit, that pregnancy is not a piece of cake. If you eat a lot of cake, it may look like you're pregnant, but pregnancy is not a piece of cake and is not the simplest thing, which means Rachel's death takes place because there's a curse over here. But then how interesting is it that it's not just that there is like this maybe side reference to Rachel. It seems to be that there is more of a direct reference over here to Yaakov and to Rachel right over here at the, as they lead Gan Eden, which means in a sense, Adam and Chava were this perfect couple, and things don't work out exactly the way that they're supposed to. But you can't help but then suspect that maybe this new perfect couple who have a very imperfect life are Yaakov and Rachel, who really take over and are this continuation of Adam and Chava. And if that's the case, the death of Rachel, I don't have to work so hard as to why Rachel died. She died because, unfortunately, that is the situation in a post-Eden world where pregnancy hurts and sometimes children are born in pain, and Rachel more so than others. Shabbat Shalom.